For comic's sake, this is Volume 1, Issue 27.
For comic's sake on iTunes.
At For comic's sake on Twitter.
Facebook.com/ForComicsSake.
For comic's sake on Instagram.
Or email us ForComicsSake@yahoo.com.
Rated Max for explicit content not approved by the Comics Code Authority. Previously on For Comic's Sake. After being killed and brought back to life 27 times over, Anthony must find a cure to being green.
Ryan is really disappointed with his artificial intelligence that's supposed to be training him to be a superhero.
I'm Anthony, and I'll be talking spoilers for Amazing Spider-Man number 22, Thanos number 2, and Gamora number 1.
And I'm Ryan. I'll be talking about Invincible Iron Man number 2 and Batman number 13.
Also, if we say anything that isn't actually true, just blame Barry Allen for always messing up the timelines.
Yes.
Amazing Spider-Man number 22. We have writers Dan Slott and Christos Gage co-writing this. Then we have Giuseppe Camuncioli as the penciler, Cam Smith on inks, Jason Keith as the colorist, and Joe Caramagna on the letters.
We haven't talked about Spider-Man in a long time, it feels like.
Yeah, and it was one of those. The last time we talked about it, I think, was the Clone Conspiracy issue one. This is a Clone Conspiracy tie-in, and I figured, you know, I let a couple go by while they're awesome and amazing. I decided
so many books to decided, talk about.
Yeah, I decided it's time to catch everybody up and talk about it again, because this was a spectacular issue of Amazing Spider-Man. Clone Conspiracy tie-in. Miles Warren, aka the Jackal, has been a thorn in Peter Parker's side since college. What spurred his latest rebranding and master plan? Find out here. One of the big reveals of the issue of Clone Conspiracy that came before this, which I'm going to guess is the third one. Yes, Clone Conspiracy number 3. At the end of that one, a pretty big reveal when this villain, the Jackal, who is the guy who created the New You technology, he's dealt with the cloning of the Clone Saga, which created the character of Ben Reilly, Peter Parker's clone.
Oh,
and,
okay.
And that character went off to, I think, the Scarlet Spider. There's a lot of continuity stuff, and this is why we can blame Barry Allen if I say something that's wrong.
He's fucking up the Marvel Universe too.
Yeah.
Not just DC.
Correct. What, yeah. Oh yeah, he's all over. Head. Yeah. All
right.
Barry's got no limits. And the Miles Warren guy back in the day, Ben Reilly became a guy, then he kind of went away, and then, like, I never read it, but apparently he died in Peter's arms. Not tonight, but died in Parker's arms tonight.
Must have been something he said.
Maybe. But there was something where he, like, deteriorated into the sun, and there's actually a flashback image of that moment in this issue. But, you see him burning, like, in the sun. This is something that happened way back in the day. Well, at the end of Clone Conspiracy number 3, the Jackal decided to finally reveal himself, and took off the mask, and it was Ben Reilly.
Oh, okay.
Peter Parker's clone. And so it's just like, okay, now what the hell are we dealing with? And that's what brings us into this here. So the opening of this issue has Ben Reilly explaining how he's being brought back and how he was killed 27 times over by Miles Warren. So they kind of have this Peter Parker.
It's like,
and
as much as three cats.
Yeah, that's some good math.
So,
yeah, there's a big fight back and forth here as Peter's reacting to the fact that, like, oh, you can't be Ben Reilly, you know. Ben Reilly died in my arms. I was right there when it happened. And how are you here? But then he starts talking about, he mentions how he had died 27 times, how his life has flashed before his eyes 25 times. And as Ben Reilly talks about this, who has all the memories of Peter Parker since he is a clone of him? I think there was even a standoff between the two where, you know, neither one knew if they were the clone, just because they were just caught in that, you know, because everyone's, the clone's memories is he has every memory, so he didn't know that he was a clone.
Oh,
and like,
okay.
So there was a big battle that went on for a while, too, and stuff. But so we get a cool little flashback here of Peter's life. And what's cool about it is that, you know, it's represented in the, like, the original art style or drawn in the art style of, the, like, the 60s and the 70s comics. So
very nice.
The way you see Peter Parker.
Oh, so
and,
we're
you know,
talking,
is in there.
Oh, we're talking it goes back that far?
Like, memory-wise, that's what he's...
Oh, I see what you're saying.
So
okay.
Ben Reilly, he talks about dying 27 times over at the hands of Miles Warren, which we get to... pretty soon here, but he goes through and he talks about his life as the Scarlet Spider, and he even, you know, remembers dying in the arms and all that kind of stuff, which I'm setting a record for saying that phrase.
I gotta interject something here. You've said it so many times. I'm getting a flashback of a Saturday Night Live sketch.
All right.
I think it was Horatio Sands was a wedding singer in a wedding band, and they were playing at a reception. And they would, you know, they would start that song, you know, I just died in your arms tonight. And then they elaborated on the, must have been something you said. Well, what happens is they get interrupted like 5 times. So they restart that song over 5 different times.
Nice.
Well, once what ends up happening is like on the 6th or 7th time, they don't get interrupted, but then they stop and they realize... Not only is that the only song that they only know those first 2 lines of that song. And then they're just, yeah, the whole thing goes to hell because that's all they know.
That makes a lot of sense where it says, Spider-Man created by Stan Lee and Steve Ditko, this story based on an SNL sketch.
Oh, perfect.
Starring Horatio Sands.
Yeah,
so
there we go.
Perfect.
That's all I'm thinking about right now.
And now we cut back to that moment when Ben Reilly died in Peter's arms. Miles Warren comes up, and this is like what happened after that moment when we thought that was it. And he comes in and he picks up his, like, you know, his particles and his ashes. And he's basically has been reviving him. And he's been perfecting his clone experiment on his original clone of Peter Parker. And to make his test better, he keeps killing Ben Reilly. And every time Ben Reilly keeps waking up, he's dying by just, like, drowning and just, like, all these awful measures. But... he immediately wakes back up in his body, remembers the deaths too. So he keeps going through all these life flashbacks as well up until the previous death.
Sounds like torture.
Yeah, I think it's probably the exact definition of torture. And as this is happening, Miles Warren just, you know, he just keeps going with it and keeps going with the experiment until Ben Reilly uses the strength of his loved ones by remembering these people who he had lost, even though it was Peter that lost him, but he has the memories of Peter. So he remembers about, like, Gwen Stacy dying and Uncle Ben and all the people there. So with all that strength and motivation, finally builds up the strength to break through this this tank that he's got him in, and he starts attacking Miles Warren to the extent where he puts Miles into the same sort of torture, and actually starts to use his technology on the original creator and basically does the same exact thing to him. Miles Warren's wondering what's going on. He starts to wake up, and he's led to believe he's the original Miles Warren until Ben Reilly shows him that now he just cloned the cloner.
Oh, whoa.
So the guy who created all the clone technology
it's
has
like
now been cloned.
Cloneception.
It is. And he has now been cloned by his number one test subject.
Okay.
And this leads to Ben Reilly creating this thing of a pill, being if you want to continue living, your body, you know, won't turn into whatever, then you have to take these pills. These are the pills that all the new you patients have been taking throughout the series in Spider-Man and Clone Conspiracy. And this is what leads Ben Reilly to don the identity of the Jackal. It takes over the form, the current Jackal, and now has a bunch of Miles Warren subjects as his little clone army, if you will. None of those clone army guys grow up to become Boba Fett or anything.
Good.
Just so you know. So yeah, we kind of, it was basically a whole storytelling issue. They're sitting there, they're at this airport scene here, and Ben Reilly and Peter Parker just going back and forth. Peter's starting to basically believe him, just being like, wow, this was your story, this was your motivation. And Ben Reilly goes, nobody can save everyone, but we can bring them back. Not like Warren did, with heads filled with fake memories. Look at me, I can tell you, believe it now, that I'm here and I'm real. Bringing back Uncle Ben isn't some scheme or delusion. It's a gift. My gift to you. That was one of the things, too, that the Jackal had promised that he was going to bring back Uncle Ben. And there was this whole thing where Uncle Ben's body is basically was dug up. Jeez. And going to be transported. And,
okay.
You know, Peter was obviously all against that. But Ben Reilly just explained the whole process and explained, you know, now it's essentially him that's doing it, you know, his clone. And that's what leads for a pretty crazy end page when Ben Reilly goes, I can tell you're struggling with the same reason I did in that tube. You feel like you don't deserve it, but even if you don't, Gwen, her father, Uncle Ben, all the others, don't they? And Peter Parker, Spider-Man, ends it by going, tell me more. And that's just great comic book writing. Continued in the Clone Conspiracy number four. And
I feel like Dan Slott is a good writer or something.
Yeah, and Christos Gage has been helping him with the Amazing Spider-Man book, because Christos will jump in when Dan is doing like a Spider-Verse event, doing the Clone Conspiracy event. So while he is putting his attention into the main title of the event, then while still co-plotting and writing the amazing title, Christos will come in. Christos, who was...
I don't know that name.
He wrote a lot of the current Buffy stuff.
Oh, okay.
He's kind of
well.
One
then
of
you're
those...
automatically a fan, right?
Yeah,
there,
it's
so.
Yeah. When I started seeing his name pop up in here, I'm just like, all right, best of both worlds.
Yeah,
here.
For sure.
And I didn't have to use my notes for that one because that's how great this comic was. That was another spectacular issue of Amazing Spider-Man number 22.
All right, I'm going to be talking about The Invincible Iron Man number 2. We have writer Brian Michael Bendis. Artist is Stefano Caselli. Color artist is Marte Garcia. And then letterer is Clint...
Garcia.
Yeah. What did I say?
Garcia. Which
Gracia.
Is understandable because Garcia sounds like... But in
Garcia.
We have... we've had some... artists and people comment on the podcast, so
yeah, that's true.
Marte Garcia could be listening.
I don't want to screw anybody over here. And then we have letterers Clayton Cowles. Riri Williams has a new armor technology that just might change the face of the Marvel Universe forever if she survives the experience. So you, sir, are the one that got me hooked on this book.
Yes.
Just because when you talked about it a month ago, I just automatically fell in love with this new character that Brian Michael Bendis created, this Riri Williams, who essentially is a new Iron Man in the Marvel universe.
Yes.
That's how to say it. That is what it is.
Post-Civil II world in a world where
Civil War II
comes out tomorrow at the time of this recording.
Okay.
The final issue.
Yes.
So.
And, yeah, I just fell in love with this character right away, so I jumped on the book, and the writing has been just fantastic. But we are starting out right in the beginning. We jump back and forth in terms of timelines in this book quite a bit. But we see, like, a video recording. It's like she's kind of taking, like a selfie video with a camcorder. And she's basically not really confused, but she's admitting the fact that Tony Stark had a artificial intelligence of himself installed to help her train to become this new superhero. And she calls it the techno ghost of Tony Stark. And she says that it's haunting her.
Yeah,
now, she's clearly joking, but that's basically what she is saying.
Yeah, this is like a recap page, basically, but to make it more like part of the story rather than just reading it in a paragraph. The Deadpool comic will do that, where Baby Deadpool will talk to you and stuff.
Deadpool.
Yeah, that's what
really
it is.
That is goofy.
It's just
like he's an actual character. Or they're just doing it to be funny.
It's just a Baby Deadpool in a Deadpool suit that's just catching the reader up, and that's kind of what Riri's doing here with her video cam.
But she is flying, basically on top of the city, and we have, I don't know, a dozen or so of Iron Man suits that are surrounding her.
Yes.
And essentially, this is how her training starts. And she has The ability to hear Tony Stark's artificial intelligence that has been installed in her suit that he kind of helped her make.
He's her Jarvis, basically.
Yeah, that is the best way of describing it. And we have a big training session going on. You have all these Iron Men kind of taking swings at her. They're firing at her. And she's essentially learning the ropes on how to use her intelligence and actually how to navigate this big clunky machine to try to get better. That's the best way that you can say it. We have kind of an interesting segue here, because on one of the bottom panels, you see her diving into the water, and then you see the Little Mermaid, and then you flash back 2 years ago where we have Riri and her best friend having a conversation.
Natalie, if my memory serves
Natalie, in the garage, and they're talking about the Little Mermaid, and, you know, her friend says that she has never seen it because she hates cartoons. And Riri, even though she's, you know, this smart, intelligent girl, just can't believe that she's never seen this classic. And they're talking about a boy here who she really has a crush on. Natalie says, you know, he's so damn fine. And it's a very... we're going to find out why they're having this conversation, but it's a very nice, typical teenage girl conversation that you would have with one another.
I've had the same teen girl conversations in my life.
I bet you have. And then you have Riri letting her know that eventually she is going to fly. So then we cut back to the training session, and you see that she is about to get slammed into the water. And you hear, she gets slammed into the water, and you see the Tony Stark artificial intelligence say, "How are your seals? You have to have your seals ready for anything." And you see what is happening. He is literally training her for anything that could possibly happen. And she says, you know, "You're basically telling me now there's got to be a better way." And he's like, "No, there is no better way. This is the best way." So we're going to cut back to Chicago again 2 years ago. If you remember how we left off on issue number one, there's a very, very tragic situation where Riri's best friend and her stepmother, I believe, no, stepdad
yeah.
was killed by some flying bullets. So we're now in the hospital after that event has taken place, and Riri is there. And she wants to know absolutely what the hell is going on. She's saying, her name is Natalie. Is she okay? Did she survive? And the doctor is saying that he is not allowed to say anything. So she rushes into the hospital room, and she sees all different bodies and stuff everywhere. And she kind of sees the top of Natalie's head, and she pulls down the sheet, and she realizes that her friend Natalie has been killed by these stray bullets.
Yeah, and the scene from the last month's issue, it was sort of led to believe that that's what happened.
Yeah.
And when I got to this, there was a little bit of hope thinking like, oh, maybe, maybe, you know, because we just cut away from the scene and maybe there was some of that. So while this was happening, while I'm flicking away on the digital copy and following to panel, and I felt like I was right there in that moment, you know, finding out, thinking like, oh, maybe he did, you know, just brilliantly write it that way, but the fate that we had thought a month ago actually happened.
So you see that we're back at the training session, and it almost looks like that Riri is kind of running away from the danger, and Tony Stark's artificial intelligence essentially saying, you know, you can't run away. And then Natalie says, "I tricked you into thinking that I ran away," and she's able to, like, take out all these Iron Man.
Riri.
Yeah, yep. Yeah.
And I'm just like, wait a minute, hold on here.
Yeah. Riri is getting a little cocky, though, and I just want to, let's see here, I don't want to get too ahead of myself here. She's saying that, I want to make sure I got this right. Just want to make sure that I don't have my timeline all messed up here. She is essentially running away and baiting the Iron Man to follow her. So she kind of has a plan of attack, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
So we're going to flash back.
That just makes me think of Joss's line in the first Avengers, you know, We have to have a plan of attack. I have a plan. Attack.
Yeah. There you go. So now we're going to flash back once again to the police department, and she is being questioned about exactly what happened with the shooting.
Who the shooters were, you know, what they were driving and all that kind of stuff. So.
And you see something. You see a flash of Iron Man. You see Spider-Man. And the officer says, did you get a look at any of them? And she wants to know, how am I still alive? And the officer doesn't really know where she's coming from. And she says, why Natalie and not me? Why my stepdad and not my mom? And then this guy's just kind of saying, well, it's random. I don't really know what to say. And Riri has a look of disdain, I guess you could say, on her face. And then you see Iron Man kind of behind like these microphones, like he's doing some kind of a press conference. So I'm not really sure what's going on there, but what I got out of it is it's very well possible that these stray bullets maybe wasn't such like an act of random violence as it was maybe there was some kind of a superhero battle, and this is what has happened. That was like the outcome. Like, okay. Because, yeah, I don't know for sure.
Yeah.
I don't know where Brian Michael Bendis is going with this. Which I kind of like that I don't know.
Yeah.
It, you know.
Yeah, I remember reading that and not necessarily coming up with many theories, but just being like, well, this may make sense at a later time. Mm-hmm.
And then we are back. Riri was baiting all of the Iron Man, and she does something with her electronics to basically get them to fall out of the sky into the lake. And she gets a little cocky, and she's like, yes, I win. And then...
Yeah, she gave them all a virus or something.
Oh, is that what it was?
In,
okay.
Yeah, that she put them into the...
Oh, a Trojan horse in your neutral network. There it is. It says right there. And she gets pretty cocky, and then you have the Tony Stark artificial intelligence says, I must say, well done. And she's like, you didn't even think I... And then you see, like, her get hit by this big electric bolt-type thing. And he goes, you really shouldn't blast your repulsor rays without a, and she's like, thank you, I know. And she kind of goes flying into the distance. So,
yeah, and as that was happening, I did witness right away of everyone, you know, taking out their cell phones. Because when you have a bunch of Iron Man suits falling out of the sky, you want to record that shit.
So. Exactly. So, speaking of recording, it looks like somebody had their iPad out and was recording the entire incident. And then we have, on the very last page, we have some dialogue. We have, as far as we can tell, multiple Americans filmed this altercation, posted it online. It has gone viral, as they say over there. A new Iron Man, and he took out the old one. All of the old ones. And we have two ladies that are outside of this. Now, I can see the way you're nodding your head. You already know who they are. I do not. But we have two ladies that are having this conversation outside of this older-looking home with all these suited ninja-looking guys with swords. And the one lady says, we need to shut them down before it gets out of hand and ruins everything we are attempting to do here. We can't take the chance again, and the new Iron Man must die quickly. Do that for me, will you? Now, that is how this story ends, and I can tell just by the look on your face and you're nodding your head. You know who these people are. I do not.
I'm just thinking about pizza. What are we doing right now?
Pizza? Oh, there's a comic? Pizza? Why, do you have pizza? Don't tease me like that.
Yeah, what this is, in Brian's previous run on Invincible Iron Man, before it got renumbered here, this was a part of a storyline, part of an arc, and you know, maybe that'll just... as the story goes, maybe that'll just get you to be like, okay.
Maybe I'm going to be picking up a trade in the future?
That could very possibly be. And then in that trade is most likely going to be Riri's first appearance, too, because she was, probably going to be, you know, depending on what collection, but it's probably like two collections or something like that. But that's where these characters were, so they kind of are kind of bringing them back in a little bit. So.
But yeah, very cool. Very good second issue. I'm really liking this Riri a lot. I love the introduction of new characters, and I like it when I can jump on the ground level.
Yeah, so, definitely a lot of fun stuff, while also going back and forth with some very emotional dramatic
scene. It is really emotional. It's really sad to see her lose her best friend two fucking issues in a row.
It's like, it's so, like you see this and it's just like, hey, this is great. You know, if you're like a teenage girl or like a teenage, you know, black girl and you see a character that you could look up to.
And as if her life probably isn't hard enough the way it is anyway, just for being black.
And then you like you pick up the book thinking like, oh, this is going to be fun. And then all of a sudden you just jump into some real, you know, like a lot of people always think like, oh, your little funny books are always
every,
for kids.
Every character has an origin story. And the first two issues, this is her origin story. So Brian Michael Bendis doing a great job. That's Invincible Iron Man issue number 2.
Next up is Thanos number 2. Thanos is pure evil. Thanos is unstoppable. It's time to take him down. What we learned.
I thought Thanos was sick.
Well, he is. Because that's what we found out at the last of the first issue, at the end of it, that he has some sort of god cancer, is what they call it in here. And Thanos is dying, and you had his son Thane. He's rounding up some troops. You got Star Fox, and then you got Champion. And he's just kind of creating this group and just being like, yeah, we're going to go and kill my father Thanos once and for all. And
it's true love.
Oh, yeah. And that's when Thane was being talked to by Death. And she knew this secret that, if I remember correctly, that she was basically revealed that she knew something that nobody else knew, that Thanos was dying. And then you cut to the last page of him just with just shit, blood, purple blood just dripping from every ounce of his face. this comic,
every ounce.
written by Jeff Lemire. Art. Awesome art by Mike Diodato, colors by Frank Martin, and letters by Clayton Coles. Here we go. So Thanos is looking for a cure for his god cancer. And as this beautiful cover suggests, which is going to be a cover that is being printed onto a t-shirt, which I bought through WeLoveFine.com, limited availability. There's limited syllables in that word, too. Go to We Love Fine, and if there's a comic book cover from Marvel that you love that week, check that website out. It's possible that could be one of the maybe 8 or 10 selected.
Yep.
I was 2 months ago when I saw this cover. I'm like, I sure hope that selected as a t-shirt. And sure enough, it is, and it is being shipped to me. So, yeah, as you look at this cover of Thanos sitting there and reaching out for a butterfly, a very peaceful type of cover. And yet the issue, you know, we see some butterfly type creatures, and then we just start seeing.
Then we have Burnination.
Yeah, he's basically going through, and he's just like looking for. Basically, he's just on the search for like all these cures, something that's going to help him. And he's just going through, and he's killing more people in the as he does.
I wouldn't expect anything less.
Yeah.
If he wasn't killing people, I really would be worried about his cancer.
That is true, yeah.
I mean,
so, yeah, from what I can tell, he's perfectly fine.
Yeah.
He's killing, he's good. Then we cut to a scene, a little mission that's going on here, and we see a very familiar character who we haven't seen in the books for a while, if my memory serves me right, but Nebula, who now looks like Karen Gillan from the movies. Nebula is here. She's on a mission. She's trying to get something, and you got some people. I forget what the heck they call this thing, but you got some people kind of fighting her for it, and we find out that she gets caught up by Star Fox, who is the brother of Thanos, and so they kind of stop her, and they stop her because she is going to be recruited as well as part of this team. So she's going to be brought into it, as she is the adopted granddaughter of Thanos. In the movies, Gamora and Nebula are sisters, and they're both like just daughters of Thanos, and adoptive daughters, whatever you want to call them. And then in the books, Gamora's the quote-unquote daughter, Nebula's a quote-unquote stepdaughter, or granddaughter. But we may see more of that in a different title I'm going to be talking about here. Lots of Nebula goodness this week. So yeah, Nebula is going to be recruited by Thane, along with Champion and Star Fox, to go ahead and kill Thanos. And speaking of the devil himself, he went on location to track down his father, Mentor. Mentor, who basically just spits in Thanos' face. Mentor makes a comment about how he feels responsible for all the death that Thanos has caused, because he's the one who brought him life. He is, you know, one half of the beings who brought Thanos to this world, and he feels that he could almost, you know, he missed an opportunity where he, kind of like that, like, would you go back in time and kill Hitler as a baby type of deal? Thanos' dad kind of feels that.
Was Thanos born?
Thanos was born. There was a series called Thanos Rising, I believe, was a miniseries, which was excellent, because if I'm not mistaken, I think it is the first time we get any sort of Thanos origin story, in a way, of seeing him as a child. You see,
so he was like a kid. He was like,
he was like born like a freak, if you will, and he was like bullied and teased, and like, it's one of those things that, like, Thanos is a very destructive, murderous character, and yet I've got like a shrine to him downstairs.
Yeah.
But you see, like, with any good villain, there's always reasons where you you feel sympathy for him.
Sure.
And so far in the movies, we haven't seen that side. And
I would say that does not go true with Adolf Hitler, though. I would say.
And
I'm really feeling sympathy there.
And I would think if anyone's got tributes and shrines to him,
that might be different. They might have other issues, and I don't think they read comic books.
No. Those aren't the
should.
Issues I
they
want.
They should.
They need it.
Yeah.
Mentor basically spits in his son's face and just tells him how, basically that he failed as a parent because, yeah, he could have done something about this, and knowing the path that he was taken. And Thanos basically wants to use Mentor's abilities and his wisdom and his skills to basically try to help him cure his god cancer. So as we learn that, Mentor had said that it would basically take forever to find a cure for it. And even if he could, and even if he had forever, that he wouldn't do it.
Okay.
He just flat out tells Thanos, he's like, no, I'm not going to do that. You know, why would I do that? That's what happens there. This is the moment when we have Thane, son of Thanos, is Nebula is presented to him. And this is when Thane makes his pitch to all of them. And he has, once again, Star Fox and Champion at the table, just going around and just talking about how they all need to team up on him and stop him once and for all, basically. We get back to the Mentor, and this is the moment when he had found out that there would be no cure, and he wouldn't help him. Thanos gets a little upset, to the point where basically just punches right through his father in the most bloodiest way, leaves his body on the ground, just completely annihilates him. And yeah, there's a great line when he says it here, because when Mentor is talking about, I would have smothered you in your crib. And Thanos goes, you know, for the first time in your pathetic life. Maybe I should read this as Harley Quinn, like last week's issue.
I don't know. I'm feeling that
maybe
one.
Not.
Maybe read it as his father.
Oh. No, Thanos says, you know, for the first time in your pathetic life, this is where he gut punches him in the worst possible way, you actually sound like my father. And then, he left him there. And as Thanos leaves that the area that they're at, their little temple or lab or whatever, Thanos is getting electrocuted as the Shi'ar. The Shi'ar Imperial Guard is here, basically just like space police. And they just say that, Thanos of Titan, you are under arrest by the authority of the Shi'ar Imperial Guard. Stand down or die. So both of these issues talks about Thanos dying at the very end, and whether it's going to be him dying at other people's hands, of him, people trying to get to him.
Or is it going to be the cancer?
it's almost a race to see who's going to kill or what's going to kill Thanos first. And and I'm running out of room on my shrine, so I could definitely afford Thanos' death right now.
Sure.
Give it a couple years until he comes back. So yeah. Allow some remodels and stuff.
Yeah, no kidding.
But no, it was another issue, and the art specifically, and I cannot wait to wear the art on my body as I purchase that shirt. So other people would say that as like getting a tattoo or something. I just say a t-shirt.
That works.
I'll get a t-shirt tattooed onto my chest.
All right.
It would look like a t-shirt, but you know.
But it's actually a tattoo. Yep. So you're going to walk around shirtless, actually.
Yes, but people aren't going to know because it's going to look like you're going to see the collar. I'm going to have the tag
pop. So it's kind of like a t-shirt that that has a skeleton on it, so it looks like you actually don't have any skin.
Exactly.
Okay, all right.
It's like when Beavis and Butthead once said that what tattoos they wanted to get, and one of them said that they wanted to get a tattoo of a butt on their butt.
Yeah. Wow. Anyways. Beavis and Butthead is some pretty deep stuff. I didn't realize. I'm going to have to revisit that.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was an amazing issue. Once again, of Thanos, which I believe is ongoing. I don't think it was...
Oh, I thought that was a mini.
I don't remember. Reason. Yeah, maybe. I mean, there's some kind of mission here. Maybe, I don't know. Whatever. We'll find out as I keep pre-ordering it because it's awesome. So thank you to everyone for Thanos. To everyone. Everyone, whether you've written it, drawn it, lettered it, colored it, or just exist. Thank you for Thanos, issue 2.
All right, I'm going to be talking about Batman number 13. We have writer Tom King, pencils and inks, Mikkel Jenin, colors are Jun Chung, and letters are Clayton Cowles.
Man, Clayton Cowles really hitting it out of the park.
Yeah, so far, 2 of our 3 books, I believe, are by him, or 2 of 4, something like that. I Am Suicide conclusion. Batman and the remains of his team come face to face with Bane and the Psycho Pirate in a final battle at Santa Prisca and learn whether this was truly a suicide mission. Now, I think I sent you a text message about two or three weeks ago, and I said something about how I wasn't really feeling this run of Batman, and you joked, you're like, I'm going to tell Tom King.
Yeah.
And, well, I'll tell you what, I feel like he absolutely hit it out of the park in this issue.
When I read this, which I would have read it probably a couple days before you did, I was so close to just saying, I know what you said, but just read the next one.
I know.
And I just left it out.
Feel like I should slap myself in the face because, let's be real, Tom King is not going to let us down. He's not.
I'll do it for you.
Ow! Oh! Now, if someone asks, I fell down the steps.
Oh, okay, yeah.
That was
for free.
Yes. But yeah, so we left off with a bunch of fucking shit going to hell because Batman got the jump on Bane inside of his Santa Prisca area where he was with everybody. And Batman is kind of down on his knees and Bane is waiting for him with Psycho Pirate, who's controlling him. And we cut to the Batcave where we see Amanda Waller goes to talk to Alfred.
And we see a big fucking giant penny and a T-Rex.
Yep. You know what? I got to say this. That giant penny, I feel like, is getting bigger and bigger with every issue, by the way.
Pretty soon, the giant penny is going to have its own splash page.
Honestly, like that thing, I never remember being that big. And by the way, on our social media, if anybody knows the history or the origin of that giant penny or that big-ass dinosaur, please let us know because we would love to know.
And we ask that to those who know naturally by reading about it because we could easily just Google and get the answer right now. But we want someone to sincerely tell us if we don't somehow come across it ourselves.
But Amanda Waller comes to Alfred and basically she knows that he is in Santa Prisca right now. Dying and getting the shit kicked out of him. So she is there to say that.
And she also gave a moment to plug the new event that's happening in DC.
Wouldn't you, right?
Which I didn't jump. I considered it when I read that. I'm like, nope, I'm not going. I'm not doing it.
The Justice League versus Suicide Squad. If I feel like if I look into the ceiling, that helps me think.
Yeah.
I don't know. But then we're back at Santa Prisca, and Bane is basically saying that physically breaking you didn't work. And he's saying, he goes to Psycho Pirate saying that he needs Venom, and he needs it now. and he kicks Batman in the face. Yeah, Batman is essentially getting the shit kicked out of him, and he's not really getting much offense in. You see the other two, oh no, I can't remember their names now.
Julie and Punchy?
Thank you. I don't know how you remember those names. Yeah. But they're just kind of...
I guess I just love comics.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is. I don't love them enough, apparently.
Hopefully I got those names right.
Yeah, no, yeah, it's Julie spelled like J-U-L-E-E and the Punchy.
J-E-W.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
L-E-E, yes. And then I think Punchy is with extra E's.
And, but you see the, Hugo Strange is starting to speak a little bit, and he hasn't really been speaking much throughout this comic. But you can, because he's just kind of standing there watching all of this. Batman is down on the ground, and Batgirl is just kind of standing there watching. I'm sorry, Catwoman is sitting there watching.
Then Commandy jumps in.
What's it?
Then Commandy jumps in.
Yeah,
oh, wait, Commandy. This is an ad.
Yeah, yeah. Don't confuse me like that now. See, now I wonder if the listeners, when they hear that, they're like, wait, Commandy is in this?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, for a second, I think they're going to actually think that. But no.
And he's eating Skittles.
Yeah, right? He's saying that the pirate can make Batman better. And he's like, tell me, Batman, what do you want? And Batman says, I want to break your damn back. And Bane is not going to have any of that. So he slaps the shit out of him with this cage, and they're back to fighting again. And then we have a cutaway to the Punchy and Julie. They're just having, like, this random conversation. So in the middle of all of this, Punchy says, well, should we have a kid? And I'm like, wait, what the fuck? I'm like, these guys are crazy.
Yeah, and right before that is one which I think I posted on the social media. So I'm
should we get a dog?
Yeah, that's where Punchy just goes, should we get a dog? And then she goes, don't we have a dog?
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, while you have all this other intense, like, body-breaking scenes going on, then you cut to this just the most random shit that
and
just gets more random.
You see Catwoman say, like, says, bat? And then you turn the page, and he's like, not yet, not yet. And then she says again, bat? And this is when my brain kind of started thinking a little bit. I'm like, oh, maybe they are absolutely working together.
And while that's happening, the Julie and Punchy are apparently just blowing up big bubble gum.
Yeah, they have like huge, massive.
Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, they have this massive. They're blowing these massive bubbles, and then he's like, sushi tonight. I don't feel like cooking, and she's like, oh, we can get those egg rolls we had last time. They were divine. And then the gum explodes all over them. And he's like, yeah, two orders. Just the egg rolls. And I'm like, what?
Then they, like, start on fire. So I'm not sure what the fuck's going on.
Yeah, it is a little bizarre. There is some weird shit that's going on.
Don't know much
here
about these people.
No.
We're learning quite a bit.
Yeah, exactly. And, but anyways, in the meantime, when the real shit is going on, we have... I gotta remember who this guy is now. Bane says, you need me to be your monster. And this is when we have this dude.
Oh, the ventriloquist guy?
Yeah, he's popping out of the water. He pops out of the water.
Alright.
And then, And then Hugo says, oh, hello, Bronze Tiger. Catwoman told me to stay, so I stayed. And I'm like, wait, what the fuck is going on here? And you have the Julie and Punchy, they like fall through this thing and they fall into the water, but they're still just having like this regular, normal conversation.
And they're still covered in bubble.
Yeah, they are. In fact, they're floating in the water and they're still chewing the gum. And we have Bane saying to Batman, who is on the ground, he's saying, I will be your monster. And then finally, Catwoman says, bat.
Lots of bats and cats.
I know. And then he's kind of giving her, Batman kind of gives her the A-OK. She jumps down and she fucking like kicks Bane in the back and he falls to the ground. And then we get the rest of the team pops in and essentially it was planned the entire time that Catwoman was going to take out Bane after he kind of earned, she earned his trust to a certain extent. And that's when we have, finally, Hugo is starting to talk. And he's saying, you're the Psychopyric. You make people feel things. And then Psychopyric says, gods fall before me. Gods! And he's being really cocky, and Hugo doesn't want anything to do with it. And he's trying to almost play some mind games with him. And he's trying to convince him that he's very scared, which obviously we know that he is enough. And now, I am not that familiar with Hugo Strange, but he must speak differently, because he was talking kind of normally, and then you see kind of the writing change a little bit, and he says, all right, enough of this.
Oh, ventriloquist.
Oh, is you, that you, what his head? Oh.
You had said Hugo Strange.
Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, well, I've been calling
because ventriloquist is like, he doesn't have that, I can't think of what his dummy's name was, but there was that conversation between Catwoman and him, and she was like, come on, it's just us two, you know, you can tell me, you know, he's fake or something, right? And
well, that's really like, makes sense.
He's real. And now, so yeah, now he starts like, yeah, his hands his like shenanigans. Possessed. Yeah,
okay.
Shenanigans.
But he says, no one controls the ventriloquist, and even Psycho Pirate is like, he's kind of freaking out here, and that's when he gets decked in the face by Ventriloquist. And then Ventriloquist gets decked in the face.
A lot of people get decked.
Yeah. So we have all these fucking people laying on the ground, and there is a enormous explosion that Catwoman sets off, and we have Julie and Punchy in this raft outside.
A bubblegum raft. Look.
Holy shit, you are right.
I don't know what all that means, but it's interesting.
It really is. Oh, dude, I didn't even realize that.
What the fuck?
I love it. I fucking love this book now. This honestly, yeah. Even though this shit is really crazy and you might need to be high to read this, it has gotten me kind of, I don't know, rejuvenated for this, for Batman here. But they're floating away, and Bane is on the ground, Batman is on top of him, and he's trying to, you know, talk some logic into Bane. Obviously, that we know that's not going to happen. But we have, let's see here, Julie, Punchy, Catwoman, Batman, and that Wesker, I believe his name is. They're all on this bubblegum boat floating away. And then we get the kiss from Catwoman kisses Batman, because that's what one of the promises that Batman made. And we have Punchy and Julie are going to be going to prison. Bane, we don't exactly know what's going to happen with Bane yet, but we turn the page and we see Bane. He's laying on the floor, and he's basically, this ends where he's screaming for Venom. Not the character Venom, of course.
Not Flash Thompson.
No, he is screaming for his Venom, because this entire time he hasn't been on it. He's kind of been natural, I guess you could say, besides being taken over by the Psycho Pirate. So that's where this issue ends, and then we are going to be starting a new arc, and that's going to be the Bat and the Cat. So, you know, we're going to see where that's going to lead to, but holy shit, this issue is really fucking good. It gets a little trippy at the end, there's no doubt about it.
Yeah, yeah. That was before you realized there was bubblegum boats.
Yeah, I didn't even realize that. I don't know why I didn't make that connection. I probably should. If I looked a little closer, I probably would.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, so basically it was one issue of Batman that I was, like, down on. And I was like, I don't know if I really like where Tom King's going with this. And you're like, I'm fucking tweeting him. He's going to be mad at you. And then, hey, Tom
King. Next week's podcast, Tom King's going to be sitting in that chair that you
that
just
I
broke.
Almost just broke and fell over.
Perfect time to end the review.
Exactly. But Tom King, if you're listening to this, I fucking love what you're doing with Batman. I'm not sure where the bubblegum boat is gonna lead us to, but I don't really give a shit. So Batman number 13, I Am Suicide. And yeah, a couple weeks, we're going to have a new arc that I'm looking forward to.
And the last spoiler-filled review of this podcast is Gamora, issue number 1, written by Nicole Perlman, who is the co-writer of the Guardians of the Galaxy movie.
Oh, okay.
Art by Marco Cicchetto.
She's scumming it in comic books now, or yeah. What?
This is her, if I'm not mistaken, I think this is her comic book debut.
Oh.
And it is my last book that I'm reviewing here, which means it was my favorite comic of the week. Marco Cicchetto on art, Andreas Mosa on colors, and Travis Lanham on letters. Gamora. Before she was a Guardian of the Galaxy, Gamora was an assassin in training and ward to the mad Titan Thanos. Orphaned by the genocide of her people, Gamora was raised by Thanos to kill without mercy and without conscience. This is how she became known as the deadliest woman in the galaxy. So yeah, this comic is great. We open up on a flashback to one of Gamora's birthdays, and Thanos has given her a great gift. We kind of see her, and she's, you know, it's not like she's... We've seen in the past of Gamora as like a child. I forget where I read that, but I've read it somewhere in all of my cosmic Marvel books here. But this one here, it's her birthday. He says he's got a great gift. That's always intriguing to find out what that's going to be. But then we are brought to the royal inauguration of this Badoon prince. The Badoon, which has always been like the number one, you know, enemy against the Guardians of the Galaxy. And they're responsible for like wiping out Gamora's race. Like she's the last person of her kind.
Oh.
So there's a lot of shit that the Badoon has done. It's predominantly, if I'm not mistaken, predominantly like a male driven society.
Okay.
There are females.
How it should be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those comments were made by Ryan. You could tweet at him.
yeah. Right. Yeah.
I remember reading a series, I don't remember where I read it, but there was an arc where they had went to the women of the Badoon, how they must live, like kind of like a Paradise Island Wonder Woman type of deal. They kind of live on their own turf, but anyways.
Badoon, I like that word.
Yeah, it's a good word. The Badoon King is on his deathbed, and they're talking about how there's going to be, you know, like, all right, we got to get the prince here, he's going to have to... you know, get inaugurated, but okay. Then the Badoon King kind of reaches out, and in some of his last words, he goes, "Not my son, my daughter." And people are like, "What's a daughter?" And then it cuts to a ginormous populated scene in which the inauguration is going to take place, and this is the gift that Thanos, I noticed him, it's like a Where's Waldo
sort of thing. Oh, very cool. Where's Thanos?
Him, yep. Oh, man.
I know. I wish I didn't even say it.
I want Scotty Young to make, like, a series of Where's Thanos in Marvel. Nebula is joining him up in the balcony, and as this is happening, Gamora is cloaked, and she's going through this. His gift to her on her birthday was, "I'm going to get you into this Badoon inauguration where all of the royalty of the Badoon are in one place, and I'm going to let you unleash on them." And she goes through the crowd. She definitely earns her title as the deadliest woman in the galaxy. As she goes through, she's going after the prince as he's going to be inaugurated, and she's going through and she's just slaughtering everybody. And this leads to... Nebula, who is constantly being insulted by Thanos. Thanos doesn't treat her well. Imagine, like, you know, take the idea of, like, the redheaded stepchild type of stereotype that you hear. That's basically what Thanos does to Nebula. And Thanos constantly reminds Nebula that he loves Gamora more and he'll do anything for Gamora, and that he wouldn't even care if anything happened to Nebula, and like he just openly says this shit, and that's kind of what we're.
I'm glad getting. He has cancer.
Yeah, exactly.
Jeez.
She's not getting treated as well as he treats Gamora. Thanos and Nebula are currently on a mission. They're in this Badoon.
Badoon.
Homestar Runner.
Yeah. Badoon. Oh yeah. Badoon. There you go. There's a reference. Oh.
I thought these were Teddy Wham memories. This is, so Thanos and Nebula are kind of on their own little mission, and what they're doing, they're searching for what they call the Elemental, which is this Big Bang explosion that was captured, like, in amber. Kind of like the mosquito in Jurassic Park, and they preserved all the DNA and all that kind of stuff. They're on the search for this part of the Big Bang that happened.
Okay.
Was caught in here, meaning it'd probably be a deadly weapon if they were to unleash it then. So that's kind of their like little side mission while Gamora's kind of distracting everyone else by murdering everybody. And we start to learn that the princess, when she was born, in order to protect her, because she was, you know, like a daughter of in the Badoon family, she was an heir to the throne, and, you know, she would be a threat because she's like, oh, she's a woman. And so they basically sent her off to this place called Ubilex, I think is how you pronounce it. It's someplace far away for her protection. That happened when a while ago. Then we cut back to, we have Nebula, who is picking a fight with Gamora over being the favorite daughter. So I just talked about that moment where Nebula was just getting, you know, just all the shit laid on her by Thanos. And then that's when she confronts Gamora. And they start up a little fight. They start fighting a little bit. Thanos has a thing where he comes in. He doesn't do much. And he kind of walks in. And he said he's just kind of tired of the whole thing. Gamora gets the upper hand. Knocks him down. And this is one of the quotes that Thanos says to Nebula. Should Gamora ever die by your hand, I will see you dead myself. So, yeah, I mean, he's protecting a daughter, but he's willing to kill a daughter that he hates and blah, blah, blah. Nebula is now torturing this guy who may have the information on this Elemental. He gives her a little bit of a secret on something that she's going to use to her advantage. She goes back up to Gamora here. And what happens is that she tells Gamora that when she thought that she had killed the prince, that was going to be like, hey, you killed everyone in the Badoon, and you killed the prince, and there's no king, and blah, blah, blah. Nebula drops the little nugget saying that, oh, yeah, by the way, there's a hidden daughter many years ago. And Nebula knows that telling Gamora this is going to set her off on a specific journey. And this is when she learned about the hidden princess, she sent Gamora there. It's a one-way mission, basically, because at the end here, Gamora is basically entering a black hole.
Okay.
And she knows that, like, I think they all know that she wouldn't come back from this, but if it gets her to kill, like, the, you know, all royalty of the Badoon, you know, that's going to be worth her life to get revenge and all that stuff for the fact that her entire race was slaughtered. And when Thanos hears about this, because I think Nebula kind of teases it, and she kind of says something, they're playing chess. He gets pretty angry when he finds that out, and Nebula kind of tricked her into going to this place, just because Nebula knew that she probably wouldn't come back. So yeah, Gamora's on that mission, and she's about to enter the black hole, and that's where this first giant debut issue.
So I'm curious, is this like current continuity, or is this like...
This is all pre-stuff, this is origins before her Guardians.
Okay.
This isn't origins in the sense of, hey, here's when she was born, like the Thanos Rising that I was talking about. But this is more so just her honor while being a weapon for Thanos.
Okay.
That was it was so damn good. The art was gorgeous in this, and absolutely loved this first issue series. I was pretty excited for. This is her first solo issue. She's just been part of many different series, obviously including Guardians of the Galaxy and the Annihilation events and all that kind of fun stuff from the 10 years ago or so. But it's cool that she's now earned the right to get her own title. You know, she's movie famous, so why not? Let's
That makes me That makes me want to watch the Guardians of the Galaxy trailer again for like the. I don't even know how many times I've seen it now. Honestly, you've probably seen it like 25 at least.
Yeah, and that's just while I was talking about this issue.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's how I'm a multitasker.
Yes.
But yeah, so while Gamora goes into that black hole, I'm going to follow her into that black hole to read the rest of her series.
Perfect.
Awesome, awesome debut to Gamora issue number one. Other titles I also enjoyed, Slam number 2, Batman number 13, Silver Surfer number 8, Invincible Iron Man number 2, Star-Lord number 1, Buffy the Vampire season 11 number 2, which is a reminder that it's always going to be my favorite book of the stack, but I won't be talking about spoilers here because in 2017, which is right around the corner, is when you're going to start watching Buffy for the first time.
Appreciate that.
So yeah, I'm going to keep that as much of a mystery as possible, but you, the listener, wondering, like, how come you never talk about Buffy? It must suck. No, it's the best. Star Wars Dr. Aphra, number 2. Captain America, Sam Wilson, number 16.
You read a lot more books than me.
Yeah, and I left some out, actually.
Animosity. Other books I enjoyed, Animosity,
oh, yeah.
4.
Yeah, I love that, too. I forgot to write that down.
It's all right. No, well, let
me
say
Marguerite Bennett.
Yeah. And Lock and Key's Small World one-shot, which I will be talking about in the other segment that we have coming up.
Ooh.
Yeah, so, and now a word from our sponsor.
Hi, have you ever felt like you were a clone? If so, we've got the ointment for you. With Clone Be Gone, by applying twice daily over every inch of your waking body, you'll slowly deteriorate as our special ointment eats at your flesh in a most subtle and refreshing way. Clone Be Gone will make you feel like you were never even cloned to begin with, now that you've disappeared into the sky above. Clone Be Gone, only $699 every month.
All right, something that I'm just going to touch on real super quick, and this is our non-spoiler trade, what the hell are we doing in our comic book world segment. Yeah.
Everything we talk about here, you don't have to quick pause it because we're not going to spoil anything.
No, not at all. But I picked up a one-shot called Lock and Key Small World. Now, for anybody that's not familiar with Lock and Key, this was an original series that started in 2008 and ran through 2013. This is chorus by Gabriel Rodriguez and Joe Hill. Now, do you know who Joe Hill is?
Yeah, he's the son of somebody famous.
Stephen King.
Yes.
Okay, all right. So, but yeah, I got hooked on this. I didn't read it when it originally came out, but it was one of my original original works that I guess you could say.
It's like, on my long list.
Yeah, so, but if for people that don't know what the original Lock and Key is about, I will tell you right now. Lock and Key tells a key house, an unlikely New England mansion with fantastic doors that transform all who dare to walk through them, home to a hate-filled and relentless creature that will not rest until the forces open the most terrible door of them all. So the best way that I can describe this series is that there are magical keys that open up magical doors to, I guess you could call, magical realms. Sure. And so the original series ended in 2013, and there's been a couple one-shots here and there, and we have another one-shot that just came out called Small World, and I'm just going to show you the cover right here. We have a very scary and big-looking spider on the cover, and that's kind of what we're dealing with in this issue. So this in particular doesn't have anything to do with the family that you follow in the original Lock and Key. This is a brand new story, but it still takes place in the Lock and Key house and that realm.
That was going to be one of my questions on where these one-shots exist, if they're like missing episodes, if you will.
Sure.
Or just like,
you can, they're going to be coming back in 2017 with some more Lock and Key, and it's just going to be following this house and whatever family may or may not live there at the time. So the premise for this individual story 3 years after wrapping up their award-winning best-selling Lock and Key saga, the team that built Key House returns to Lovecraft, Massachusetts with a new tale of terror and suspense. An impossible birthday gift for two little girls unexpectedly throws open a door to a monster on eight legs. And that is what you are seeing in the cover. The reason that I wanted to bring this up is just because it is a series that I read in its entirety. And for anybody that likes really creepy horror and horror,
yes,
and suspenseful storytelling.
I also love creepy horrors.
Yes, and suspenseful storytelling. Lock and Key is absolutely for you, and it is what I like to call a masterpiece, especially visually. We got to give some credits to the colorer here, the colorist as well, Jay Fotos, which I believe we've actually talked about him before.
Fotos.
Yeah.
All right.
Fotos. So I believe we talked about him before, but I'm just going to page through this a little bit for you because it is just some of the most gorgeous artwork in coloring.
You got some pretty realistic approach. You know? Yeah. Nothing's...
The way that they draw like monsters in this book is absolutely unbelievable. I'm going to just show... Yeah, you get the spider introduced here. Not going to spoil anything, but
yeah.
It is very a fan... Like a, what is that word? Not fanta,
Fanta.
Not Fanta.
Do you
it's,
want the
it's
Fanta?
It's fantasy, but there's another word. It's fantastical,
Phasma.
Okay, sure,
Captain
why not?
Phasma.
Yeah, all right, let's go with that.
Brianna Tarth.
Yes.
hey, there she is, right over here, to my left.
Yeah, we got a nice figure
it's
of her.
It's a big Phasma.
That is a big-ass figure, yeah. But yeah, I really enjoyed this, and it captures the feel of the original series that are all available in trade paperback. And actually, at the end of this, they're advertising a really nice set of hardcovers of the original Lock and Key that are, you know, $50 a piece. But I'm sure Crimson Cowl would be able to hook us up with something like that. But yeah, this is... Oh, this is fucking awesome. I love this story. I love the concept of Lock and Key. Never seen anything like it before. And Joe Hill is a really good comic book writer. Like, I don't know if he's done any novels or anything. I'm sure he has. I'm sure his dad, Steven, wouldn't allow him just to do comics.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But yeah, he also did another one that was kind of done in this style called Wraith. Which was really good, which I read. I think that ended like early last year. I read that too, and that was also with Gabriel Rodriguez doing the artwork. And that was done, it was a different story, but it was done in the same style artwork.
Okay.
And I think Joe Hill, for me, has earned his spot on my pull list with pretty much anything that he comes out with, because
he
is just a fucking awesome storyteller, and he has a way of creeping you the hell out. And these two guys make a really good team.
Yeah, the three hosts of Comic Book Club Live, one of the best podcasts that I listen to that's not ours, they are constantly going nuts about Lock and Key. So much that they're actually written into the series.
Holy shit.
And they always just talk about their characters and stuff. They say they love it beyond that, but they're in there because of their like constant love for it. And just with their show and their connections or something, but they're actually in the books. And but yeah, anyways, it's always been on the very long. How many issues total?
Are
we looking at?
I'm gonna say
like a 60 range.
No. There's only I want to say like 30, but they are grouped together in like groups of six.
Okay.
So they're like six arcs. There's six like about 5 to 6 issue arcs. But then it's like a whole different story.
Okay.
Like it kind of follows it together, but it's, yeah, that's kind of how they did it. And I was just, I'm just paging through the back of this comic. I said something about if Joe Hill did any novels, and it looks like we have literally something called Tales from the Dark Side by Joe Hill. I'm just going to read this. I've never read this in my life. Complete with jaw-dropping illustrations from Hill's Wraith, collaborator Charles Paul Wilson III, this hardcover release will look into Hill's mind as never previously seen before, unlocking a horror of hypothetical unlike anything in the current horror marketplace. that literally does not tell me anything about this. Yeah. I don't know. So I don't. It almost sounds like kind of like a autobiography or like a some kind of a biography that's okay. illustrated. Maybe I don't know. Yeah. But yeah. Anyways. Lock and Key. I won't. That's a series that I wouldn't be able to talk up enough. That would be a fun read over Halloween to just creep you the hell out. And it's very. It's just the fantasy world that they created is awesome. I just. Man, you should get a cut. You know what? You should get a picture of that cover. I think that would look good on our social media page.
Well, let me
since get you are the so, since you are the social media master.
Yes, basically, of all social media,
you pretty much are. That's, I read that somewhere.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, it said Anthony, master of social media. But yeah, you definitely do a good job keeping that updated with some fucking awesome pictures.
Picture a taken.
Yes. So, but yeah, that's Lock and Key, the small world. So, what about you? You got anything fun comic? Anything comic related?
Emphasis, not comic book, but emphasis on the book part.
Okay.
Because while the past couple times, like I talked about it, like a shit ton of trades the last time of all the different things.
Yeah,
I
you
read.
Were ripping through your pile.
Yeah, and I even left out a few things I did read just because I read so much extra stuff. But during my days from like, give or take, Saturday to Tuesday when I'm done with, you know, new comics and I'm waiting for new comics to come out the next Wednesday. That is when I normally jump back into my stacks, but this time I'm like my novel section's getting pretty big, so I'm like I gotta throw in a novel or two here.
Did you read one recently?
Well, I'm in the I picked up the After You, which is the sequel to Me Before You, Emilia Clarke, who starred in the recent movie.
Yes.
I read the book upon her announcement for the movie.
I know you told me you would love the book.
Devoured the book. Knowing her personality, I knew that, like, this character, Louisa Clark, is, like, just like Emilia Clarke, except with an extra E at the end of her name. Yeah, the movie happened. It was awesome. I loved it. I loved the book. And then found out there was a sequel to the book, which I then I bought back in spring.
Oh, okay, but you're just getting to it now. Are they going to be doing another movie?
There's no word on it yet, and I'm sure these kind of movies, you know, wouldn't necessarily be that expensive to make.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a supernatural film of any sorts, a romantic comedy of sorts.
It's not a Lock and Key movie.
No. So budget-wise, it'd probably be on the cheaper end, but I know there was no news on it yet, but yeah, anyways, I decided to jump into throwing a couple novels because I saw they were stacking up too, so...
There, I know, it's, you know, I've got a stack of novels too, but I'm already behind on comics. And just with the podcast, I'm trying really hard to keep up with my comic reading, just so I always have fresh material to talk about, especially in the trade section. I have to dig into my trades and stuff. I'm hoping to, well, I'm not going to actually tell you yet, because then if I don't read it, you're going to be really disappointed. But there's one, hopefully in the next couple of weeks, I'm going to be reading, which, you know, I bought it.
Okay.
And... Four. Nope. And you know I bought it, but I think you have forgotten that I bought it. And I'm looking forward to bringing that to the pod because you're going to want to geek out.
My Little Pony.
Yes, it is. You got me. So the novel, my novels are building up too. So it's just, you can only read so fast.
Not long ago, I read a novel a week.
Oh, that's really good.
I took the page count, divided by 7, and I made myself being like, well, I'm going to read this many pages.
That is a fucking fantastic idea.
I did it for a long, like three months, I think I had a stretch of that.
I'm not even kidding. What was it, either yesterday or the day before, I was thinking about that, about how can you drive yourself
motivate.
And to stay on task to read it. And I'm like, you know, if you just... looked at the page count and divided it per day, you could just do X amount of pages.
And there were days where I was so into it and just was in the mood that I would read beyond there, and then I would read...
Would you subtract?
Well, I would then go and reevaluate the rest amount of days, and it would make it be like, hey, now I only have
30 pages. Yeah, I know.
Pages
what the fuck?
Is what I was going to say.
Why can't we do that with other segments of our podcast?
Yeah, right. Novels.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, very cool. That's actually, do you think you're going to start doing that again or not sure yet?
We'll see. I'm also buying more comics than I did then. It wasn't that long ago, but I'm,
Novel a week. That's impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people, I don't know,
most,
I think...
Most impressive.
I think reading in general is... People wanting to read more, I think, would be a typical New Year's resolution, mm-hmm. if I had to guess. So, I know it's one of mine. I mean, you know? So, fuck losing weight and all that shit.
I want to read less.
You want to read less? Yeah.
And I got more time to read more.
Yeah, well, brilliant.
How about that?
Brilliant.
I'm going to read less, so I save more time, so I can read more.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
All that time I'm losing by reading, I'm going to take that time and use it to read.
There we go. I am speechless.
And some of that stuff, and most of them stuffs, is comics for a reason.
That we have a really good reason.
Oh,
and we
so
talk
much.
About it all the time, and it's
one reason,
and that is for comics' sake. For Comics' Sake on iTunes.
At For Comics' Sake on Twitter.
Facebook.com/ForComicsSake.
For Comics' Sake on Instagram.
Or email us ForComicsSake@yahoo.com.
Music by Bicycle vs. Motor Vehicle. Please visit them online, soundcloud.com/BVSMV, as well as BVSMV.bandcamp.com. Dramatic sound effect by Digifish Music from freesound.org. And special thank you to our key grip, Brian Kraft.